Welcome to Attention Confidential, the podcast where we explore deep self-awareness, bold curiosity, and passionate advocacy for both ourselves and our communities. Some voices you'll recognize, others will remain a mystery, but they all share one thing: the courage to be seen and heard by speaking up about what matters most to them.
In support of safety, please be advised that this podcast contains explicit language and direct or indirect references to material which some listeners may find triggering. Topics are highly personal and intimate, likely to touch on themes including but not limited to abuse, bigotry, body image, disability, mental health, sexuality, and trauma. Please prioritize your safety and the safety of those around you who may be exposed to this material, especially young folks. Please also note, this is an ongoing project, which means I am actively engaged in learning while creating. The format, the tools, and skills to produce this material are all new to me. As I build and refine, I ask that you understand there may be kinks along the way. And because transparency is one of my core values, I should also share that I am using software that includes enhanced features to simplify the editing and post-production process. Any editing of this content, however, this original, organic, human-generated content, is done so at my discretion, specifically to optimize sound quality, not to manipulate, omit, or alter any substantive material in the recordings. All guests have a chance to review the material before it is published so they can be assured that their voices and stories are held and shared with care, treated as sacred things to preserve and pass on. You can find more details about each guest and relevant resources in the show notes for each episode.
The original music, as featured on Attention Confidential, was written, composed, and produced by Christopher Colley Biondi, a deaf pianist, composer, and dear friend in Central Kentucky who generously provided his skills and talent to support the launch of this podcast. Hey, weirdos and queerdos, and welcome to another episode of Attention Confidential. Part of what makes this podcast unique is that it deeply respects and honors our right to privacy and emphasizes the importance of consent in all interactions. It consists of a diverse collection of intimate, personal shares and stories that explore self-awareness, curiosity, and advocacy. As always, these three themes are expressed as the mirror, the magnifying glass, and the megaphone, respectively. I am your host and the creator of this podcast, Maggie Green, here to remind you that your voice matters and your stories are safe here. You may recall another special aspect of this show is that some guests choose to disclose their identity while others remain anonymous. Sharing our identities with others is such a generous gift, and today's guest has chosen to share theirs with us. Before I reveal who they are, here are a few things to know about them. This person uses she/her pronouns. She is West Virginian, born and raised, and also lives with chronic illness. One of the many things she says she loves most about where she's from are the people who raised her, namely her family, her church, and her community. I've known her for almost 20 years, which is wild to say out loud, and as part of the Tragic Optimist tour, we had the chance to reunite in person for the very first time since our college graduation, way back in the, well, let's say early 2000s-ish. Today, I am both humbled and grateful to consider her a friend all these years later. Her name is Marisha. I'm so happy to have you on the podcast, Marisha. Welcome. Thank you for being here and for being willing to share a little bit about what matters to you. Would you like to take a moment to introduce yourself?
Thank you so much. And let me first thank you for having me. My name is Marisha, and I live in West Virginia. I have been a West Virginian all my life. The only time I have not lived here is whenever I was in college in Kentucky. I am pretty open that I am somebody with a chronic disability. I have rheumatoid arthritis, and I live with my husband and our very good dog, Artemis.
I love that very good dog reference. Like, all dogs are very good dogs. I find myself saying all the time, like, we don't deserve them.
We truly don't. Like, just the best little companions there are. Sometimes I guess they're big companions, but they're all little tiny baby puppies to me.
Puppies, I agree. Well, thank you for sharing. In particular, I appreciate that you share who you live with chronic illness, right? I think it's really important to stigmatize that conversation and create space for it. And I really appreciate that you shared that with us today.
Yeah. And I, you know, there are some people that might feel uncomfortable with that sometimes, but it's really, it affects so much of my life, where it certainly can when it's not treated well. And it's often invisible unless you're somebody who knows what to look for or can just tell that I'm not having the best day. It otherwise might just look like I'm cranky for no good reason when really there's a lot going on with that. And you just never know when you are interacting with somebody that has something invisible going on. So it's just something good to be mindful about.
That is a great point. You mentioned you're from West Virginia. It's no secret that I'm originally from Kentucky. So we were neighbors, I guess, growing up and didn't know it.
Right.
I'm curious. So you said you've lived there all of your life. You're born and raised there. Do you have any insights about the area, like something that you really love about West Virginia? Because I know maybe it has an unsavory reputation, let's say, sometimes like other southern states, Kentucky included. What would you say to anyone who isn't sure what to think about West Virginia?
I would say that there are great things and not so great things about everywhere you can live. I grew up with some really amazing people who helped raise me and loved me, put a lot of care into helping me develop. And I think that a lot of people I know who grew up and chose to stay here feel similarly about the people who raised them. And I would like to see more like-minded individuals be here with me in West Virginia. It's also a very beautiful place. I love the mountains. I love nature. I love living around places where I can see, you know, some possums and raccoons and bears and deer. So the nature really appeals to me as well.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you for sharing that. I've driven through West Virginia many times and really, really have an appreciation, a deep appreciation for the landscape and the history. So moving into our first segment today, the mirror. This is all about self-reflection. And the question kind of leading this theme is like, what is something special about you, something that you've learned about yourself over the years? It kind of makes you unique or maybe different from others. Is there something specific you might like to share along those lines?
I would just say that I've gotten very comfortable in a world that really likes to get things done quick. I like to take my time with things. I don't like to be rushed, not just with everyday things, but sort of long-term aspirations or goals. It's kind of harder for me to maybe develop some of those goals because I think it's really important to focus on enjoying everyday things, enjoying your time now, and making sure you check in with yourself about, hey, is this something I really want? What do I really need? Because it could be that you might not really want that end goal, or you might want to use your time doing something differently. And that's different for everybody. But I really just enjoy finding joy in everyday things. And I feel like you have to kind of slow down to do that.
That is awesome. And I, you know, you didn't reference urgency specifically, but I'm thinking about all of the pressure and stress and influence in our culture, right? In Western culture, specifically in America, especially, like you said, right? To get things done quickly,
to get as much done as you can in the least amount of time. And I'm thinking about productivity and the unspoken or spoken expectation narrative of this is how a life should unfold, right? Like, there's childhood and then there's adolescence and then there's adulthood. And of course, adulthood, as we know, comes with all of these rules and expectations and societal pressures. And I'm hearing some rejection of that from you, which is really exciting. That definitely appeals to me. I don't know if it's like oppositional defiance for me, but it's like, you know, like you should, or this is the way, like, I don't know. I kind of tune out whatever comes after that word should, because it's like, actually, just as you said, like we get to choose, right?
Yes.
Lead our
And like, have you ever gotten to a place where you're able to also examine other people who are, let's say, just trying to make it to that, well, I don't know, make it to, I guess, that place everybody assumes we're trying to make it to. And either they seem absolutely miserable, or they have absolutely no clue what they're doing either. I would rather kind of struggle or not struggle my own way and enjoy more of my time than burn myself out trying to get something I might not even want.
Yeah, no kidding. I love what you said about slowing down too and being present. Of course, it's kind of meta, I guess, but the inspiration for this first season, these conversations, is this giant road trip, right, that I took. And of course, we had an opportunity to see one another as well.
Delightful.
It was awesome. Awesome to be able to see you again. And one of the things I learned through that experience is when you're flying or in a kind of a high speed travel mode, like there's so much that you don't get to see, so much that you don't get to experience. And I'm thinking even about interstate travel on the road, like you could try to get somewhere in a hurry, but it's a lot more fun and a lot less stressful if you just go the speed limit and enjoy it, right? Take it all in.
Yes, I 100% agree.
Like you were saying, you get to this destination or you reach this milestone or whatever. Sometimes that happens with me and I get to that point where I'm like, I don't even sit and enjoy and appreciate and acknowledge what has happened. It's like I'm so focused on the next thing. So I'm feeling very inspired by your insights as a reminder to slow down, like appreciate those little things.
Yes. And I thought it was interesting that you had mentioned like sort of having oppositional defiance towards a word like should.
Mm-hmm.
Because what I find interesting is that I grew up being like a very people-pleasing child, and perhaps one of the children that like adults like having around because I didn't cause too much of a fuss. But I was also being very observant, and sometimes it would be frustrating, let's say in adolescence, when people start getting crushes and start dating and stuff. That did not happen for me, whether because I just wasn't demonstrating that I was interested in that, or perhaps because I was an atypical beauty and not a typical beauty. I just didn't have that. And it was really frustrating at the time, but it gave me an opportunity to observe other people dating. And it gave me an opportunity to see, well, they don't actually seem like they're having a great time. It looks like they're fighting a lot, or they seem to be making up fights with each other just because, and that is not my jam. There's plenty of conflict without introducing made up conflict. I don't want that. And that kind of continued to be true for me throughout my young adulthood too. I didn't date too awful much. And then I finally found somebody that like we wanted to build a life together. And it was a different path than most other people took, especially at the time I met my now husband on the internet. OKCupid, if anybody remembers OKCupid when they had the cool tests and stuff like that and all the data out there. There were still plenty of, you know, unpleasant people, but at least they had the cool data you could look at, right? It was just very different than a lot of the other people I saw coupling up or getting married. But it felt right to me. And so I'm really glad that I didn't force myself to be with somebody just to be with somebody.
Absolutely. And I love your description of observing and taking mental notes of like what's happening around you. It seems like by slowing down and following your own pace, maybe you can learn from others' mistakes before you have to experience those yourself, you know, like, okay, so this is clearly not it, you know, not the way. Since you weren't in a hurry, you had time to process that and like incorporate that into actions you took in the future, which sounds like you're really happy with where you landed.
Yes.
So moving into the magnifying glass, which is all about curiosity and kind of looking at something in close detail, kind of analyzing. And this actually came up in the earlier part of our conversation. Communication, being different from others. We had talked about what are some things that you're interested in learning more about. You mentioned communication and neurodivergence specifically. What would you like to share? What comes to mind for you?
So I would say that this is just my opinion. I don't know that the data shows this, but this is just sort of anecdotal. I think there's a lot more neurodivergence out there, and people are just starting to realize, because it's been more okay to share experiences, that, you know, people have neurodivergent processes or ways they intake information. And I'm married to somebody that I feel has a lot of neurodivergence. That also means he does some really wonderful and interesting things. But it does make communication a little bit different, because you could tell us both to do the same task and we are going to find different ways to accomplish it and wonder why the other tried to do it the way they did it. And so it's been really important for us to make sure that we're not only on the same page with, let's say, a task or a goal, but it's important for us to know what it is we expect to get done or expect to fill from said task or goal. And I think it's not just important at home, but I've had experiences with a lot of people I work with who are definitely neurodivergent, and they are phenomenal friends, phenomenal employees, but sometimes they don't feel understood, which breaks my heart. And I think it's really important for everybody to open up a little bit to people maybe not having the same way they intake information or way they express what they need and feel.
Yeah, I was thinking about, as you were talking about like tasks and processes, like in a work context, what is the most important thing? Is it the end result or how you get there? Right. And if you're dealing with a diverse population that takes different approaches to different things, communicating those expectations is really important. Like, if the process is as important as the end result.
And sometimes it is, and sometimes it isn't. It's worth examining.
Yeah, absolutely. Also, along the lines of communication and neurodivergence, I'm thinking about, you know, personal experiences and professional ones too, where anything resembling like sarcasm or passive aggression comes up, like anything except clear and explicit communication, causes such confusion. It's really a setback for whatever that context and relationship goal might be, especially when, you know, when you're communicating with a neurodivergent person. Like myself, of course, as you suggested, right, there's all kinds of different flavors and variation, right? Like there's no standard.
Yes.
Nothing, you know, there is no such thing as normal. Let's say everybody's so different. For me, you know, with chronic anxiety, but also with ADHD,
coming from a traumatic background as well, where language was sometimes weaponized and confusion and things like were leveraged intentionally as a tool to hurt me or confuse me in adulthood now. Like, I don't have any room for that at all. It's like, tell me what you mean. Say what you mean, you know?
And please make it as neutral as possible, especially for work. Let's get the filling part out. And let's have this real discussion about what's going on and not, like you're saying, let's not weaponize this conversation. Let's make it productive for everybody.
That's a really important point, like being able to separate the feelings from the issue at hand. I think about emotional regulation being a challenge, something that I certainly have struggled with, have witnessed others experiencing that challenge as well. As that relates to communication, there's some really complex, nuanced space there. Any other thoughts about the intersection of emotions and communication? Like, how do you suss that?
Yeah. So I do think it's also interesting because sometimes it's hard to tell if somebody has any neurodivergence because they could be masking. But I also think there are some people who would probably be neurotypical that are not good at regulating. And there, you know, are situations where it seems like they are okay. They are allowed to be dysregulated. And the people who have maybe more trouble acting what we consider typically are expected to put more work in than the person who is neurotypical, which I also don't think is very fair.
Yeah, that's an understatement. I'm just thinking that is fucked up. That is totally unfair.
Isn't it?
And how many other concepts like that will we find that same double standard, right? Like, society serves and favors the neurotypical experience, and it's hard. I'm glad you mentioned masking as well. Learning a lot about that personally, figuring out what that means for me, also clients and other relationships in my life. I have like this idealistic hope that there will be a world at some point where we don't feel like we have to gear up like that, put so much effort into just simply existing, you know?
Yes. And I feel like in a place like our country, we've really expect a lot out of people who provide services, right? And we're often expecting them to provide service a very specific way, particularly with a smile. I think the expectation for just in general is already not fair to expect everybody to just show up every day and provide their services with a 100% smiley attitude, right? So I'm just thinking of how additionally unfair it is for people who are already trying to fit in a very specific way that their brains just don't do naturally.
Immediately what comes to mind is customer service, like that service with a smile. We're talking about masking. I just thought of a story a friend told me not long ago about a person in a service industry position who was totally aware of all of these things and like embodied that same rejection and resistance that we were talking about when it comes to like hustle and urgency culture. So it was a barista at a coffee shop. And the person who told me this story is the customer coming in to get coffee. I think they were behind someone in line. So they're witnessing this interaction in front of them. And the customer service person was clearly dead inside. It was like the tone that they delivered the messages was, again, there was so much awareness of just how shitty and unfair those expectations were. They were still playing the role that they were expected to play, but there was like conscious resistance in their tone and their expression. And they had said something to the customer in front of this friend, the person who told me the story. Have a nice day, capitalism kills, or something along those lines. Like, you know, have a nice day. Like, don't forget, like, this is all bullshit. Just really interesting. And any glimmers of that kind of behavior where there is that level of self-awareness, that level of conscious resistance. I just get so excited about that because it's like, yes, you know.
Good for you. I'm so glad they had those moments. I hope they're still keeping it up, whatever they're doing now.
And I understand too, in certain like career-oriented environments, right? There's not a whole lot of room for that. Maybe in this situation, the supervisor or the manager wasn't there at the time. Like, I don't know if they still would have behaved that way or chosen that same language if they were like, you know, under someone's thumb. Not every office environment is gonna leave room for those kind of small rebellions, but gosh, I'd love to see more of it. Like, say how you feel, tell it like it is, call out the things that are unfair, injustices and oppression.
And I mean, I would rather have, as a customer, of course, I want a good experience, but I don't necessarily need it to be because you are really trying hard to be happy about giving me the service. I'm just happy with like a neutral experience. I don't get offended if somebody is like not smiling. I think that's just absolutely outrageous.
Sometimes it's off-putting, honestly, when you can tell that it's such a performance, they are miserable internally and having to project that image externally. Like,
Yeah.
lots of interactions in restaurants and food service spaces where that was happening. And you know, I've been on the other side of that table too. I've been in the service industry and like dealing with managing different personalities and just really trying to get through the day, collect your paycheck, and go home without losing all hope and humanity, you know?
Yes, I do.
Speaking of hope, I think that's a good segue into our final segment today, the megaphone, all about advocacy. Definitely interested in any specific message or mission, or even an organization, if you have one in mind that you'd like to kind of shine a spotlight on, maybe share about your personal connection to that.
So, the place I would like to bring some attention to is Covenant House in Charleston, West Virginia. They provide services, medical care, food, and assistance to get shelter for anybody who needs it. It is open to everybody who needs that help. And I know for me, I've had times where I definitely needed help with medical care. I needed help with food. I needed help with shelter. I've been very lucky because I have family that have been able to cover me for that assistance when I've needed it. But not everybody has either family or friends that can afford to help them do that. And especially because we live in a place that doesn't necessarily provide everybody with that backup assistance. It's really important to support organizations like Covenant House that opens its doors to anybody and everybody who needs that help.
Is it specific to West Virginians?
It is specific to West Virginians. It is a local place. They do really wonderful work. They even have, if people need an address to get their mail picked up, they can use their in-house post office to get mail to people, because that's one of the struggles people who don't have housing deal with, is that they have no place to get their mail from, right? So they just kind of really think about the big picture of how can we help people get back on their feet.
Shout out to Covenant House. That is fantastic, Marish. I really appreciate you sharing about them. Looking forward to sharing that with listeners as well so they can learn more. Certainly if folks are in the West Virginia area and are in need of support, this is a resource available to you. And if you're not in the area, you know, this is, I think, an opportunity to look for similar organizations that offer that level of support for folks who need it. Covered a lot of ground in a short amount of time. And I'm thinking about listeners who might be wondering, okay, so I know more about self-awareness, taking my time and being more present in the moment, know a little bit more about communication styles for neurodivergent folks and how to navigate that. And of course, you shared about Covenant House. If there's any like specific advice or calls to action for folks who are listening, what might those be?
I would say, really, if you find yourself in a place where you feel really overwhelmed, take some time to take care of as many of your immediate needs as you can. Start with physical things, like, do you need to hydrate yourself with some water? Do you need a snack if you can get a snack? Do you need to rest? Because to me, it's really important to get yourself to a stable, regulated state before you can maybe start communicating well with other people or helping out with getting other people services or needs. And so, I don't know, do you ever find yourself like in a place where it feels like you're just holding your breath and you keep trying to check box off all of the things on your to-do list, but you just kind of feel miserable?
But yeah, are you reading my mind right now? My first thought was like, sometimes a snack and a nap, like going back to those basics, will change your whole outlook on life. The road trip experience, having to like keep my body to a point where I could be not only conscious, but functional for safety reasons, right? We're traveling these long distances. And then the social battery aspect, like if I'm not hydrated, if I haven't eaten, like you don't want to to know me when I'm hungry.
Me neither. My husband has plenty of anecdotes about hanger and me that I hope he shares in funny ways whenever he shares them, because they're actually really not great.
It's not good.
It's ugly. But I also find that once I've given myself some things that I need, and I'm not necessarily talking about luxurious, you know, self-care, just basic maintenance, I'm in a much better headspace to communicate well with other people or think about how I need to communicate with them if they are also experiencing issues, or just to have a better time with them and have fun with them more.
Now I'm really curious, because this hanger piece is super familiar. There certainly were moments on the road trip. I had a travel companion for part of it where like maybe one of the two of us or the both of us hadn't met those basic needs. I feel like there's a threshold, like a really fine line, but like once you reach that point, it doesn't feel feasible to communicate clearly. Like my brain is not, you know, it's not.
And you can ask me, well, what specifically do you want? It's too late. I can't tell you specifically what I want at that point. Yeah. You are going to have to decide what we're doing.
That's right.
It's too far gone.
What do you do? How do you navigate that?
So, you know, it's funny you mentioned that, because Drew, my husband, were lucky enough to get invited to Hilton Head Island with some of his family over Memorial Day weekend. It was sort of a spur of the moment thing. And the day we traveled down there, we had a really small breakfast that we shared mid-morning, and we did not eat again until like 8 at night. Oh no, indeed. And we both at that point were exhausted, and he was trying to think of me and like, hey, I really want you to be able to pick any of these restaurants to eat at, because, you know, we like to try new places. And I was at the point where I could not make a decision, but also his family had asked, hey, will you pick up this food we ordered at 7 and bring it to the beach house?
Oh, you got to deal with other people's needs too. Oh, well.
And so my brain is like, well, we got to do that first, because they already ordered their food. It's going to be ready at 7. It is now 6:50. We have to get this for them. And he was trying to say, but we're already out. We might as well get something for us while we're out. And I was like, I cannot stop thinking about getting that food to them. Once we get that food to them.
The people pleaser part.
Yeah, the people pleaser part. There it comes out. And so we really had to talk it out while we were frustrated. So sometimes, if you can find that little bit of energy, if the other person can agree to take that little last bit of energy to agree to talk it out, you end up at a local diner that's really, really good. And you have a really great meal. It might be one of the best meals you'll ever remember in your life.
Long overdue, delicious, I'm sure. Wow.
It was great.
That reminds me of a story from the road trip. And I want to give a shout out to a dear friend, Nancy. If you're listening, I know you know and you remember. Just know that I will never forget this. I will remember it and cherish it always. We were past the hangar threshold in a similar heat of the moment space, right? We had made plans and the schedule kind of shifted. Turns out the place we had planned to go to dinner didn't actually offer dine-in as an option. Like they had outdoor seating, but this is in Chicago, so it's like windy and cold. We had pulled into our lodging place for the night, and I was just like, I can't. Like, I don't have anything else to give. I don't even think I could call the place and place an order. So, kind of bringing this all back to calls to action and piggybacking off of your advice to listeners, if you find yourself in a vulnerable position like that and you can't make a decision or you're struggling to communicate or you need resources that you don't have, ask for help, seek out support. It might be hard to say, like, I am struggling, I need support, but sometimes that's the best thing you can possibly do, you know?
Yes. And I would also say, because I know it's like, feels like one of the most boring topics ever, but truly do the everyday things you need to do to take care of yourself. Stay hydrated, eat as well as you possibly can. If you need help with those things, ask for help, like Maggie is saying, please. But also remember that if you don't schedule maintenance for your body by taking care of it and hydrating it, getting it a little bit of movement, getting it some nourishment, it will schedule maintenance time for you. Let's say with hanger, you don't want that to happen. So preemptively try not,
Absolutely.
but even if you get to that place, like Maggie is saying, ask for help.
Yeah, certainly in that situation, it was like the social commitment and the schedule was sort of like I got preoccupied with that, right? And I think this is common among neurodivergent folks as well. An entire day goes by and you've been really intensely involved in a project and you're like, shit, it's 3 p.m. and I've only had coffee. I mean, let's say I had a do-over, right? If I could do it over again, we had plenty of snacks. They were just in the back of the car. And in that moment, it felt like miles away. We'd kind of been holding out for dinner, like, we got this plan. But you know what? If your body's saying that I need this need met now, you got to listen because
You gotta listen.
it's going to retaliate. You know, it's going to fight back. It's going to take you down. You know, it's like your brain capacity starts to reduce. Then communication and all other basic functions are a struggle. Like, you need these things to survive. I should also say that it was a happy ending to the story. I communicated with the friend that we'd had plans with, very nourishing personality. She's been down this road before and knew exactly what to say and what to do, which was a
Oh, bless
miracle.
her.
Yeah, she's like, I'm on it. You know, I'm getting off work. I'll swing by. I'll pick up the food and I'll meet you there. We kind of converged at just the right time before, you know, disaster struck. Yeah, I'm so glad that you brought that up. Hanger and meeting basic needs. Again, I think it ties nicely with neurodivergence. This is a common experience, you know, executive functioning, right? Like just doing the basic shit that we need to do to get through a day. Got to make it a priority.
You definitely have to make it a priority. And then that way you can get to the fun stuff, whatever that is to you. It's different for everybody.
My final question for you, Marisha, then, what are those things that bring you joy? What's one thing that, you know, helps connect you to that feeling?
I love dogs. Thus, our dog Artemis. She lives with us. It's pretty great. We bought a house just for her so she could have a nice backyard to spend time in. And books. I haven't been able to read printed books as well as I have been able to in my youth, but I've been doing audiobooks a lot. I've been finding so much joy in escaping in those lately. And I like some video games, my favorite one being Stardew Valley. And I like just being able to have like everyday time with my friends and family. I don't need a whole lot of it because I'm very introverted and I recharge my energy with time with myself. But even just running errands or doing the grocery shopping with Drew or just getting to have a little chat with my sister or going to my dad's and sitting on the porch with him and just chatting, just like little everyday moments like that.
I love that. And for listeners too, whatever it is, especially with where we are right now and everything that's happening around us, we've got to take those moments, make those moments as much as we possibly can.
Attention Confidential is sponsored, produced, and distributed by Self Magnitude LLC, an ethical microbusiness on a mission to transform how you see yourself. It is hosted by Maggie Green, personal brand and style strategist for weirdos and queerdos of all ages and gender expressions, who is also the face and voice behind Self Magnitude, helping people feel seen since 2020. If you're looking for support on embodying all aspects of your identity and showing up as your radically authentic self in person, in print, and online, please visit Maggie's 100% DIY website at selfmagnitude.com. That's all for this episode of Attention Confidential, but of course, the conversation doesn't end here. I encourage you to keep exploring, keep questioning, and most of all, keep sharing your stories. If today's conversation spoke to you, please pass it on. And if you have a story of your own you'd like to showcase, I am here and ready to listen. You can find all past and future episodes at selfmagnitude.com/podcast. And until next time, remember this: your voice matters.